Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Randall J. Sleater, Chief Judge Frisch, Judge Margaret H. Chudich, the Honorable Randall J. Sleater presiding.
Thank you. You may be seated again. We beat the marshal. Welcome to the Court of Appeals for April 2. We have four matters on our oral calendar this morning. We are live streaming the matter and recording as well, so we do ask counsel to identify yourself for the record when you begin your comments. No additional recording or separate recording is allowed unless you have pre-approval. And so first case is file A24-1091, State of Minnesota versus Keonti Devon McDowell, the appellant. Counsel for appellant, you may approach, and when you're ready, begin.
May it please the court, my name is Julia Brady and I represent appellant Keonti McDowell in this matter. This case presents two issues. First, whether the COPS alert, and COPS is an acronym, it stands for Keeping Our Police Safe, whether the COPS alert on its own can provide a sufficient legal basis for an investigatory traffic stop. The second is whether the state in this case proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. McDowell knew about the existence of the Danko against him. As it may be dispositive, I would like to focus most of my time today on the first issue. When Officer Tonda stopped the car that Mr. McDowell was riding in, the only information that he had came from the COPS alert itself. The district court here correctly found that the COPS alert on its own is not sufficient to support an investigatory traffic stop. However, the district court denied Mr. McDowell's motion to suppress because it concluded that Officer Tonda relied on additional observations outside of the alert, which got it to the reasonable articulable suspicion standard.
Ms. Brady, can I ask you, I'm looking at the judge's order, mm-hmm. and I see the part on page, addendum four. The court agrees that the existence of COPS alert does not constitute a warrant and is not sufficient to support an investigatory stop. That's the point you were just now making. However, the court finds that Officer Tonda made additional observations that led him to form a reasonable articulable suspicion. And so the first one referenced is the knowledge of an arrest warrant. Felony warrant was identified, or later identified as a defendant. An individual later identified as a defendant had a felony warrant and was identified as an individual being in possession of the vehicle. Where did that does that evidence come from?
So that is actually an erroneous fact found by the district court. The district court specifically says that the COPS alert had information about the fact that Mr. McDowell had an active arrest warrant and had been previously in possession of the car. When you look at the alert that was submitted into evidence that the party stipulated to, when you look at the actual COPS alert, it does not contain any information that identifies my client, and it does not contain any information that talks about the fact that he was either in possession of the vehicle or had an active warrant against him. So the state tries to argue that, you know, this information, the alert did have this, or the court can infer that the alert did have this information because it's in Officer Tonda's police report. However, which was the other exhibit that was stipulated to at that hearing on this motion. However, the police report here specifically cites the COPS alert as the source of that information that Officer Tonda had. So we have a discrepancy in the evidence where you have an exhibit that doesn't have this information, and then you have a police report that's referring to the exhibit saying it had this information. And because we're on a motion to suppress stage here, the burden is on the state to prove that this warrantless seizure was constitutional. And
am I reading the report correctly? It appears to be a chronological summary of what occurred. Mm-hmm. So the first paragraph seems to be the information the officer had, or I guess it's the equivalent of an articulation of the officer since we don't have oral testimony of what led to the stop, and that's simply a reference to the COPS alert. So what you're talking about now is on the second page, I think most of the way down on the second full paragraph, I returned to my squad car and pulled the driver's license of the male listed on the COPS alert with the felony warrants, and it's got the appellant's name.
Yes.
So is that what you're referring to, that you believe that that's the source of the judge's finding?
Well, no, Your Honor. I think the judge made it clear that the judge in its order specifically said the cops alert had information about the fact that Mr. McDowell was driving this car and had a warrant. So that is an erroneous finding on its face because the alert that we have in evidence does not contain that information. Now, if there was a discrepancy in the evidence that the court then looked at and said, hey, you know, the police report has this information, and so I'm just going to assume that it was in this alert and the alert isn't complete for some reason, that is something that the state had the burden to show. If there is any type of deficiency or discrepancy when you're at this stage, this motion to dismiss stage, it is on the state to show, the burden is on the state, so any deficiencies or discrepancies should be held against the state in this matter.
But in any event, the officer did not know of the existence of the warrant at the time of the stop, according to the police report, correct?
According to the cops alert that we have in record, he did not know that.
However, the only information he had at the time of the stop was the existence of the cops alert.
Yes, that is true.
Is there any meaningful distinction between the cops alert and an informant tip?
Yes, there is, or there can be, depending on the circumstances. So one of the things that courts look at when looking at a stop or a seizure or a warrant based on an informant's tip is the reliability of that tip and where that information came from. Now, this is why the cops alert here on its face is not enough to justify a stop.
Is that the same? I think my question's a little bit different. So mm-hmm. I think we're getting to the end of the analysis instead of the beginning. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at a cops alert, are we supposed to look at it through the same lens that we would look at an informant's tip to determine the indicia of reliability? Is it just a different kind of tip?
I think that that is one way that the court can look at this. And I think one of the reasons that is that this case it's difficult to make that assessment here is because we have absolutely no idea where the information in this cops report specifically came from. And so whether or not this court ultimately, you know, there's no controlling precedent that says, hey, this is how you have to analyze a cops report, but there are situations where, you know, this court does consider the source of the information in other situations like an informant's tip or the reliability.
Do you think that Arnold gets there? Do you think that Arnold sort of intimates that we should be looking at a cops alert as to what the underlying basis of the information is?
Yes, I do believe that Arnold gets there. And I do believe that that would be an appropriate thing for this court to do in this case.
Do you think that because Arnold is non-precedential that we should speak on this issue?
I do believe that this court doesn't have to put forward a precedential opinion on this. I think if you're applying just kind of the general principles of how you evaluate an informant's tip and then also just the general principles around reasonable articulable suspicion, you can still decide here that the cops alert is not enough. However, if this case were to be made precedential, I would suggest that a syllabus point here would be that a cops alert on its own without any underlying information or any underlying information about the source of the information in the cops alert is not sufficient to reach the reasonable articulable suspicion standard.
Do you happen to know how widespread cops, spelled with a K, keep our police safe is? I noticed the Arnold and Dancy decision, I think, were both out of the only two cases that I found in our court, Hennepin County, and this was a Dakota County. Do you know how widespread that is? The reason I ask, in over 24 years in the district court, I don't recall ever seeing cops spelled with a K, and this particular acronym.
I do not, and that information is not in the record, which I believe cuts against the state's argument that this alert on its own could be a source that reaches the reasonable articulable suspicion threshold. And I think the only thing that we do actually know about cops alerts in general in this case is that warning on this alert that says this cops alert is for police safety purposes only. It does not justify a warrant, and it does not justify the stop or search of a car or a vehicle or an individual.
Counsel, the officer's report notes that he saw the license plate on mm-hmm. the car, and then he reviewed the short cops alert from the previous day. It wasn't an alert from a long time ago. It was the previous night, I think, that said that the plate didn't match the registration on the car. If a police officer sees that situation, is that enough to stop a car to inquire?
If that information is coming solely from the COPS alert, no. And in this case, the reason for that is, as we were just talking about, we have no knowledge of where that information about the mismatch plate came from. We don't know if it came from an anonymous tip. We don't know if it came from witness identification, a police investigation. So what you have here is an alert that says these plates were mismatched. Officer Tonda did not discuss any other alerts that popped when he ran this license plate that talked about a stolen car or a stolen license plate. He also didn't do any additional investigation to try to corroborate that information. Theoretically, he has access to this CAD database. He could have looked at this license plate and seen what make, model, or color of a car is supposed to be associated with this license plate. If he had done that, that would have corroborated the information in the COPS report and likely would have gotten him to the reasonable articulable suspicion standard.
Which is not a high standard.
It's not a high standard. However, it does require more than a hunch.
What if the COPS alert itself had said that an officer had run the CAD? Then we have a different situation and he could have pulled over the car?
Yes, I do believe that you have a different situation here if the COPS alert itself identifies where this information came from. I think that, when you're looking at the two cases here, Arnold and Dancy, those cases are great indicators of what level of cooperation is needed to have a COPS alert be a part of the reasonable articulable suspicion standard. In Dancy, you had a car that was stopped for speeding initially, so the COPS alert isn't involved in that initial stop. But then you have a search done on the individuals in the car based on the fact that the COPS alert identified them as being potentially armed and dangerous. But then you also have the police officer's testimony that the driver of the car matched the individual identified in the COPS alert, and the police officer had observed furtive movements from the driver and the passengers. So in that situation, you have a COPS alert with other additional indicators of suspicion, and that's how it could be used in that situation. And then in Arnold, you have a case where a COPS alert talks about a car that was used in a shooting the day prior, and there were a couple things there that then made the COPS alert a part of that reasonable suspicion package. The first was that one of the officers had independently learned that the car was involved in the shooting. So there was COPS alert knowledge, and then there was also an independent source of knowledge. Additionally, the officers were able to identify that the people in the car, there was one woman driving and three men in the passenger seats, and that matched the information that was in the COPS alert here, or in that case, in Arnold. And so right there, you have the COPS alert as a part of a whole package where some of that information has been verified and identified.
So to follow up on the questions Judge Shudich had, I see in the court's order, additionally, Officer Tonka observed that the vehicle was displaying the license plate, and it gives the plate identification that was on it, but mm-hmm. the registered plate was for the vehicle of BARR4. I didn't see any reference in the police report, so your point being is the only place that would be found in the record is in the COPS report?
Yes. Yes, and I think the fact that it's the only, it's not found in the police report says that that was not necessarily something that Officer Tonda relied on when making this stop. And if it is, the only information that we have, again, comes from the COPS report itself, which in this specific instance can't reach the reasonable suspicion threshold.
And his first paragraph seems to be the reason, and it matched for the second issue. We've got the audio mm-hmm. from his discussion with the driver. Do you know why I stopped
yes.
you? And I recall his answer. He had told her that it was the COPS report alert.
Yes. And I think that, it's, as I've said, we don't know the source of the information here, and that's the ultimate, the crux of this situation is we don't know if this information is reliable. However, I do want to note that even if the information in the COPS alert had been about the fact that Mr. McDowell had a warrant, so even if that was actually in the report that was in evidence, that would not have been enough to reach the reasonable suspicion standard either. Because, so the district court relied on State versus Setnich, I think that's how you pronounce it, which said that, it's reasonable to assume that the registered owner of a vehicle is the current operator of a vehicle because there was a warrant out for the registered owner in that specific car. That's not the situation that we have here. Mr. McDowell is not the registered owner of this car. And the only association that he has from this car, according to the police report at least, is that he was in possession of it prior, during the event that precipitated the COPS alert. That means he was in possession of the car, which was not his, 24 hours, more than 24 hours earlier, and in a different city. It is not reasonable to infer that somebody who was driving a car that is not theirs a full day prior in a different city would necessarily be still in that car. And if Officer Tonda had done any more additional investigation here, he would have seen that the driver of this car was a woman, and he would not have been able to see Mr. McDowell in this car. And you know this because the window tint was so strong that when he did approach this car, he had to ask the car's occupants to roll down the windows because the tint was so strong so he could see who was in the back seat. And that's when he identified Mr. McDowell. So even if the officer had taken this additional step to try to corroborate the information that was in the cop's report, it would have dispelled any level of suspicion that he had had that Mr. McDowell was still associated with this car in any way. I see my time is almost up, so I will just say that we respectfully ask this court to reverse the district court's denial of the motion to suppress and then reverse Mr. McDowell's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, when you're ready, you may approach, identify yourself, and begin.
May it please the court, my name is Cody Dormsgaard, and I represent the respondent in today's matter, the state of Minnesota. I appear to address the two issues before the court that the appellant noted, and I similarly will begin with the first issue. As I agree, I believe it would be dispositive. I'm going to start by answering some of the questions that Your Honors asked that there weren't sufficient answers given on. I think that the first one is that's important is where the information came from. The cops alert is very clear, I think, that it says where that information came from, that the vehicle was involved in a flee. It was last seen north on 35W leaving Burnsville, and that the vehicle had been involved in a there had been a stop. The stop was for a theft. It also notes that there were an unknown number of occupants in the vehicle and that it was displaying an incorrect license plate. And that's where the analysis here really begins.
Counsel, where in the record is the evidence that the information that's the substantive information that's set forth in the cops report has an indicia of reliability?
Your Honor, I think that the fact that it notes where that information came from, that it has details specifying the information regarding it, and then the officer's report notes that he received a phone call from the officer. Now, this is after the stop has started, while he was waiting for the identifying information for the appellant.
Doesn't that make that irrelevant to the issue of the stop and the indicia of reliability of the report? In
Your
other
Honor,
words, would you agree with the characterization that the chief had asked the respondent's attorney that this being a cop report be akin to a tip, which has to be separately corroborated, or the reliability of the tip itself needs to be confirmed? And so I'm assuming that's why there's the disclaimer on the cop report itself.
Your Honor, I think that the information, you know, the cops alert notes who to call for additional information. The officer's police report isn't entirely clear when he made a call to the phone number on the cops alert, but it indicates that officer called him, which would indicate it being, you know, around midnight, and this being a nearby jurisdiction, but not the same jurisdiction.
So we're on an appeal from a motion to suppress, and you'd agree that it is the state's burden to establish the constitutionality of the stop at this juncture, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So what is the affirmative evidence that the state put in that's in this record that indicates that the officer at the time of the stop had the information that was reliable and corroborated at the time from the cop's report at the time of the stop. I didn't see it in the record, so if I missed it, I want you to point that out to us.
Your Honor, I think the information is what was in front of the vehicle. It notes that on the second line of the first paragraph, that Officer Tondo observed a 2013 silver GMC Acadia with the CKD259 license plate. The report notes, I believe, on the last page that the license plate for that vehicle, excuse me, I think it's the page.
But the officer who stopped the vehicle did not have any reasonable, articulable suspicion that of criminal activity that he observed, right? He didn't observe any criminal activity.
Your Honor, the vehicle, the officer observed the vehicle bearing the wrong plate on the vehicle, the mismatched license plate.
But he didn't know that until after he stopped the car, right?
I believe that based on the first paragraph noting what license plate was on the vehicle and the note on that the correct plate was the bar 4, which is noted on the second to last page of his report, notes what the correct plate was and that he did have that information.
Now, the officer didn't testify at the Rasmussen hearing, right?
Correct.
Okay. Is there any evidence that the officer, I mean, it is the state's burden that the officer actually knew that this car was bearing an incorrect license plate at the time of the stop? I mean, I understand your argument that we're sort of piecing that together or making some assumptions about what's in the police report, but I didn't see any affirmative evidence that the state put in that this officer knew that this plate was on the wrong car.
I think, Your Honor, the fact that I would agree that there isn't any specific word-for-word statement from the officer that says, I observed this plate, this was what the correct plate was, but I think the fact that the observed plate was incorrect and that the police report notes what the correct plate was corroborates the information that is in the cop's alert.
So how do you square that with the statement from the officer on the squad video or on the body-worn camera video where he says, do you know why I stopped you? And he says, there's a cop's alert on this vehicle for felony fleeing. That's the reason that he stated for the stop. He doesn't state any other reason for the stop. So how do we square adding additional reasons for the stop that aren't articulated by the officer in the absence of his testimony?
Your Honor, I think, I don't think he listed every specific instance that would be probable cause for the stop there. As appellant noted, there was also dark tint on the window. The officer didn't note that was something that they had stopped the vehicle for. But I think there are numerous reasons here that the officer had. When he approached the vehicle to explain the stop, pointed out the most serious of those, which was the knowledge that he had about a felony warrant. I don't believe that his decision not to note the other reasons.
Is a dark tint on the vehicle a reasonable articulable suspicion to stop this car? I didn't see that in the record either.
No, Your Honor. I was just noting that was another thing that appellant had noted as something that when the officer came up, he couldn't see in the vehicle. So I'm just noting that there are other reasons that are present in the police report, the notes, why the vehicle was stopped. I think it's irrelevant what reason he gives to the driver if he has a reason that there would be reasonable articulable suspicion for.
In your view, what additional indicia of reliability must a record contain in order for an officer to stop a vehicle based on a cop's report, if any?
Your Honor, I guess my position would be that I believe the cop's alert is sufficient
on its own.
On its own, for an investigatory stop.
How do you square that with Arnold?
Your Honor, I believe that in Arnold, I don't know that Arnold specifically requires there to be a significant addition of reasonable reliability. So my position would be that I think the cops alerts, the purpose of cops alerts is to provide information to protect law enforcement. And I think public policy would dictate that having that information is important for officers to have, that being able to understand what they're going into when they make a traffic stop or any other type of stop, because these alerts come up not just for a traffic stop, but they would come up, my understanding is, anytime an individual's name is ran, if there's a COPS alert associated with that person, they're there to provide protective information so that officers, when they enter into that stop and they interact with that individual, they know what they're getting into.
Would you disagree with the disclaimer on the COPS report? Because if I understood what your answer to the Chief Judge is simply that, indeed, that is a warrant, or in this case, it's a sufficient basis to form a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity.
I disagree. I would agree that it's not a warrant. The document itself isn't a warrant, but I think it can provide reasonable articulable suspicion necessary for an investigatory stop.
So you disagree with the disclaimer that's on the COPS report itself?
I don't think that the disclaimer is... I think there's a difference between a search and an investigatory stop.
This record does not furnish grounds for the search or seizure of any individual, vehicle, or dwelling. This record to be used only for official criminal justice purposes. So it sounds like, though, you're disagreeing with that, because your answer just now to the Chief Judge was that alone could be the basis to stop.
I believe there's a distinction between an investigatory stop and a search and seizure.
But the stop requires that an officer have reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity. So what is it? So the COPS report is issued at some previous point in time, right? And then an officer later sees the vehicle, which is identified in the COPS report. At the time that the officer sees the vehicle, what is the officer's current reasonable articulable suspicion that that vehicle is involved in criminal activity? Are you just saying that because it was in the past suspected of being part of a criminal enterprise or some activity, that in the future that could give, that is enough to constitutionally stop the vehicle?
Are you referring to in this specific instance?
Yeah.
Your Honor, I would say that the criminal activity was the bearing of a license plate that mismatched what was supposed to be on the vehicle.
But he didn't know that at the time of the stop.
I believe that the record does note that the officer ran the plate, saw that the license plate that came up on the vehicle, and that he was aware of that the license plate was supposed to be the other license plate. That's information that officers would be able to review when they run a plate. They would see if it connects to that vehicle or not. I think that is sufficient for the officer to make the stop. That's.
Can I just clarify then by your answer, though, that you concede there's no evidence of the officer corroborating that by separately checking the license plate's accuracy? You relied solely on the COPS report.
I would agree that the report is not clear if he ran what the correct plate on the vehicle was. It notes that he ran the plate on the vehicle, that was the CDK license plate, and that the COPS alert came up. In order to determine the correct plate on the vehicle, he would have had to make a traffic stop in order to know what that vehicle's VIN number is, in order to determine what the correct plate is. He can't just run the plate that's on the vehicle and determine, you know, if that plate comes back to a different vehicle, he can't just determine what the correct plate is until he's identified what that vehicle itself actually is. There's not an ability to do that.
How would the COPS report then know that? Because it seems to me that the COPS report is from a police officer the previous day, and it says, you know, that the vehicle is displaying this one plate, but the accurate plate is this. So, to me, I think a police officer seeing a car with a certain license plate and reading this report, to me that comes close to reasonable suspicion if we know that, you know, the previous police officer did the checking.
I don't know that the office, so I would agree that the cops alert doesn't note specifics about what happened in that traffic stop, what information they gathered, how far the traffic stop had gone, but it does note that the officer, that an officer had initiated a traffic stop on the vehicle and that the vehicle had fled. I think that I don't believe the officer, when observing a vehicle bearing the wrong plate, needs to know what the correct plate of that vehicle is before initiating a traffic stop to investigate what that information would be. If that was the standard, officers could never make a traffic stop for an invalid plate. There would be no way to enforce that unless they observed a vehicle parked with nobody around it, where they could actually go up and identify the VIN number from outside the vehicle and then run that to locate the correct plate. So what the officer had in front of him was that the vehicle was bearing a license plate, that license plate did not appear to match that vehicle, and a traffic stop was initiated. That is reasonable articulable suspicion.
Isn't it true, by the way, though, that in terms of timing, the officer waited till there was backup to initiate the stop? And so it seems like in this situation there would have been time to run the plates. He saw the plate and separately corroborate the cop information?
I would disagree, Your Honor. That is factually what happened, but the officer doesn't have the ability to run the correct plate for the vehicle without having
not run the correct plate, but isn't there... It seems like I've seen this in reports where they do the description of the vehicle, run the plate, and it'll see whether it matches, comes back and matches the Acadia, for instance.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I believe that is what the officer did. His report doesn't note that, but he ran the plate, noted what the plate was on there. I see that my time is concluding, so I'll just briefly conclude my answer.
That's fine. Thank you.
If you don't mind. I think the officer, by running that plate, reviewing that is completing that specific investigation that Your Honor just noted. So based on that information and everything
But just to clarify, you agree the burden of proof and it's not in the record, so we cannot assume that he did any of that.
I would agree that the court can rely on what's in the record, and what's in the record is that the officer ran the plate on the vehicle and that plate did not match the vehicle in front of him.
Where can you point us to that?
The second line of the first paragraph in the officer's report notes that he observed a vehicle bearing that CKD license plate in front of him and that he ran the plate.
I mean, that the statement in the report doesn't say that was a false plate. The statement in the report says, I ran the plate and found out there was a cops alert.
And then he notes, the report notes later what the correct plate on the vehicle was after he's able to identify that vehicle.
After the stop, right?
Correct, after he's able to identify that vehicle.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes, indeed.
So when he says, I'm looking at the narrative of the police report, and he said, I ran the license plate of the vehicle via CAD. That's the second line right after he says, I observed this car with the license plate. And then he says, I ran the license plate of the vehicle versus CAD. So I'm not familiar with what would come up when you run a license plate, you know, with the correct, whatever's on the car, you run the CAD, what comes up?
Your Honor, my understanding is that what comes up is the information for that plate and what is associated with it. So the vehicle that license plate is, the type of vehicle, the make, model, year, color, who the registered owner of that vehicle would be, and so numerous items that are able to identify what that license plate should be attached to, and that's what the officer would have been able to review here. I think in this case, a cops alert also comes up. What I can't answer is whether or not the cops alert supersedes or if they come up together. My understanding is that both information comes up, though, and that an officer would be able to review and see what the correct information is for that license plate and what it applies to. So thank you, Your Honors. I just would ask that you affirm the district court's ruling on this issue and then would affirm the conviction of the appellant. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you'll now have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I do want to just make a couple of points. First, there is ample case law that says that an investigatory traffic stop is a seizure. And in that case, if a car is seized, you do need reasonable articulable suspicion. And that is what the disclaimer on the COPS alert says. It says that this alert, the information in this alert alone, cannot be used to justify the seizure of a vehicle. And in this situation, all we have here is an officer who knows what's in this alert and then seizes a vehicle, and that is not enough.
Is the fact that the COPS alert is prepared by an officer who could be held accountable for the information that's set forth in the alert, does that provide an inherent indicia of reliability that would satisfy the informant tip standard?
No, Your Honor. And I believe that it's really important here to look at what the purpose of these COPS alerts are. So I guess I'll back up. First off, while an officer prepares the report, we don't know where the officer gets that information, if it's an anonymous tip, if it's a confidential informant, if it's, you know, something else going on. So
Personal observation,
exactly. However, the purpose of a COPS alert is for officer safety. And the alerts, because the alerts have this disclaimer on it that say, you know, this is not enough to satisfy these requirements, it's likely, and we don't have this information in the record, and that is part of the issue here, is we don't know a lot about these COPS alerts and how reliable they are, but it's likely that officers will over-include unreliable information to make sure that officer safety is protected. And that's why this disclaimer might be on this COPS alert.
I'm just wondering, though, I mean, in this case, it's a little bit unique because the COPS report is signed by the officer, it's prepared by the officer, it appears to be based on the officer's personal observation of felony fleeing. I tried to stop the car and the car took off. It's not like a regular informant tip where somebody outside of the force is informing police of potentially criminal behavior. It's something that was personally observed. It gives me a little bit of pause here.
I believe that that is still not enough to reach the reasonable articulable suspicion standard. I think that, first off, the report here says, you know, it was involved in felony fleeing. We don't know what the situation was there and why there was a theft, who was fleeing, why they were fleeing. There's just a lot of unanswered questions in this situation. It's possible that the officer walked up to the car and, you know, saw there was a theft happening, started to walk to the car fled, and then got the information about the license plate from a different source that wasn't their personal observation. Whoever was robbed in this case or wherever the theft took place. And I think that this is slightly different, but one of the things that distinguishes a COPS alert from something like a warrant is that there's a neutral third party that reviews a warrant and evaluates, tips and the indicia of reliability that's present. And we don't have that here in a COPS alert. There's no third party that's reviewing this to determine the reliability. It's completely on the officer that's creating the report. From my understanding, I don't know exactly what the vetting process is for publishing these COPS alerts. But it's exclusively on the police officer to determine the person who prepares the report, what's important for the purposes of officer safety. And I think that, you know, it's, Judge Slater made the good point here that there was a slight delay in the stop while he waited for backup. And that is how a COPS alert should be used. If you have a situation that you know it's dangerous and you have additional information that creates the reasonable suspicion standard, then you can do things like call for backup because you know it's a potentially dangerous situation, or pull somebody out of a car and do a limited frisk search for weapons based on that COPS alert information. But there has to be more to actually pull that car over in the first place. And something that the officer, in this case, Officer Tunda, could have done is, like I said previously, ran the plates and looked beyond just the COPS alert and looked to the make and model of what car was supposed to be associated with these plates. And he could have called the Burnsville Police Department. The COPS alert says contact the Burnsville Police Department if you see this car. And he could have verified and just figured out where this information came from. None of those things were done, and none of those things, I think, would have impacted the ability of him to stop the car, you know, a couple minutes down the line if he had verified that information. And if there are no further questions, I would respectfully ask that this court reverse the district court's denial of the motion to suppress. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions this morning and your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement. We'll issue an order within 90 days. You each have a good day.